Hi, I'm Rick Schwartz.
Buenos dias, world. I'm Marco Wendt.
Welcome to Amazing Wildlife, where we explore unique stories of wildlife from around the world and uncover fascinating animal facts. This podcast is a production of iHeartRadio's Ruby Studios and San Diego Zoo Wildlife Alliance, an international nonprofit conservation organization which oversees the San Diego Zoo and Safari Park.
Hey, Rick.
What's up, Marco?
I was kind of thinking we should probably do another episode featuring the Savannah Conservation Hub.
Oh, yeah? What did you have in mind? I'm thinking, let's see, Savannah elephants, rhinos. Oh, I know. You're the bird guy, so it's got to be ostriches. Oh, no, hornbills, right?
You know, that's not a bad guess, but hold on. Let me ask you this. Did you know that the day with the longest amount of sunlight in the Northern Hemisphere, it's coming up right now, really close, June 21st this year?
Well, yes, I did know that. And so you're the bird guy, and you just mentioned the longest day of the year, and you want to talk about the Savannah Hub. So I am going to conclude, because I'm a smart person, that you want to talk about the ostrich, the longest bird alive today, anyhow, when measured from the ground up.
Oh, man, that's a pretty solid guess, I gotta say. You do know me very well, buddy. But believe it or not, I actually wasn't thinking about a bird this time.
What? Really?
I know. Shocking. I know. Everything's good, but...
Okay, good. But, I was going to say, you need to go to your doctor.
You know, nothing is wrong with the world. I still love birds. However, maybe this will help you, right? I'm going to give you a little clue. World Giraffe Day is also on June 21st. How's that for a clue?
That's true. Someone had a brilliant idea not too long ago to make the longest day of the year in the Northern Hemisphere World Giraffe Day to honor the long-legged, long-necked giraffe.
That's exactly right. And that's why we should head back to the Savannah Hub so we feature the amazing, the impresionante giraffe in today's episode.
Doesn't sound like too much of a stretch to me. Let's do it.
Nice. Excellent. I have one more idea for this episode, though.
Oh, yeah? What's that?
Okay, what if we leave the studio and head up to my home away from home, the San Diego Zoo Safari Park, right? And we should talk to one of the wildlife care specialists who works with giraffes on a day-to-day basis.
That's a great idea. I'm in. Let's go.
I am Charlie Hyde. I'm a lead wildlife care specialist here at the San Diego Zoo Safari Park. I have worked here at the park for about 15 years.
Charlie, first of all, thanks for taking the time. This is awesome. And we're at a really beautiful spot. So just for all the guests here that are listening, we might hear some birds chirping. We might even hear some of our wonderful wildlife in front of us. I see a rhino right in front of me right now. So this is really great. This is one of the most unique things about the Safari Park, I think. It's this, these types of habitats where you see these multi-species examples, right, from Africa and from Asia. Can you describe a little about this area for us?
Yeah, of course. So right now we're overlooking one of our Savannah habitats that's multi-species, which means it just has a diversity of animals out there, one of which is giraffe, another is rhinos, like you just mentioned. And so we are able to take care of these animals in more of a setting that's indicative to their natural habitat. So a little less like being brought in to barns and that kind of stuff, and more so they're kind of living their best life out in a big field habitat. The habitat we're looking at is about 60 acres, so it's a pretty good size where they get to shake about and move their feet around.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I've worked out in the field now in this department for, oh shoot, it's been over a decade for sure. But it's one of those things where like you come in the morning and like you're trying to get somewhere, you have somewhere to be, like you need to go and get this animal's fecal sample or something like that.
Yeah.
And you can't get there because there's a giraffic jam in front of you. And so you have to wait for this herd of giraffe, or a tower if you will, that's what they're called, to move off the road so you can like continue on your way.
And I love the fact that you mentioned the giraffic jam.
It's a real problem here at the park. Yes.
And that kind of leads us into why we want to talk to you today. We are heading into just a few days away from the longest day of the year. It's Giraffe Day, World Giraffe Day.
Yeah.
On the longest day of the year. And we wanted to talk to you about why the giraffe has all these long adaptations and what they are. So I think my first question for you is going to be, what is your favorite giraffe adaptation? What's the one thing about giraffes that's like your favorite thing that whenever you see them or acknowledge, aside from the fact that the group of them is called a tower, which is pretty cool, but what's your favorite thing about a giraffe adaptation?
Well, I mean, there are so many. It's really hard to pick just one. And honestly, this is going to seem like a lame example and probably one that everyone says, but they're the tallest land mammal in existence. And just the fact that, especially on these field enclosures where there's so many other species that rely on their instincts. And what I mean is that If a giraffe stands at attention, every animal is aware that there's something going on. Because of their height, they can see all of these things from far away. And they're the watchtowers of the savannah. And all the animals that they're dealing with or that they share a space with are very adept to that. They're aware. And so if a giraffe takes off running, the entire habitat will take off running. They don't have any idea why.
Yeah.
They're just like, if the giraffe is running, we all need to be running. And it could be like a kid that has happy feet, which is just they're kicking out their feet and having a grand old time, you know. But it could be something really important too. Like, you never know what exactly is going on out in the habitat. And so I think that's just a really cool example of dealing with these animals in a mixed species habitat and just seeing how they all interact with each other. And their height plays a really big part in that.
So going further into the watchtower concept then, I must admit, when I've had the opportunity to get up close and personal with giraffes, I just fall in love with their big brown eyes.
Yeah.
And those eyelashes and the look that they have. So part of that watchtower, they've got really good vision, isn't that correct?
Correct, yeah. I do know that they have excellent vision, that they see from a long ways away. They have those beautiful eyelashes to protect their eyes from the sun and from dirt and sand getting in there.
And those big old eyelashes, too.
I mean, oh, my gosh. They're so pretty.
Yeah, and you and I worked together for years, too. And, yeah. You know, I am definitely the bird guy. But, oh, man, yeah. Like Rick, I fall in love with giraffes.
Yeah.
Everyone gets excited when they see giraffes,
it's so,
you know?
Cool, too, because especially here, there's not always opportunity to be, like, head level with them. So it seems like we're always working a little bit from a lower vantage point.
Yeah.
Because we're working with them on the back of vehicles. So when they look down, they bend their head down, and they, like, they're face to face with you. I swear, it's like they're looking into your soul. Like,
oh, no doubt.
You can see your reflection in their eyeballs. In fact, I know other wildlife care specialists have pictures of the reflection from what they're seeing on their eye.
Yeah.
It's just super cool.
Yeah.
They're just so neat.
And to play in, so our audience knows, to play in further to that idea of a giraffe, you know, kind of bending down and coming into that eye level for us, you then get a whole new appreciation for just how big their heads are.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
Yeah, I think because of where we stand versus where they stand, we don't get a full concept of the fact that their head's about the size of our torso.
Mm-hmm.
When we talk about nose to the back of the head, and they're just so massive.
Yeah.
It's so impressive. But yeah. Also, and as much as they can inflict damage by swinging their head, they're also so incredibly gentle with mm-hmm. us in this space. At least it is almost surreal to have something that large moving so quietly and gently. But it does bring me to the next the next point. Usually when they're coming in that close, it's because we might have a snack that they would like.
Absolutely.
And suddenly they open their mouth and this giant tongue comes out. Can you tell us about that adaptation of the tongue, all the things about it, why it's important for them, how they use it, etc.?
Yeah, for sure. So giraffe get their adaptation of their height is because they like to eat trees, and trees on the savannah are tall. And so they had to grow tall to eat these trees. Well, another thing about trees that are from Africa is a lot of them have thorns. And so there's so many adaptations that a giraffe has that we could talk at length about them. But
at length.
You got it.
Oh, man, I'm surrounded by puns today, everybody.
So the length of their tongue, I'm going to say it goes about 18 centimeters long,
yeah.
And it's dark. If you've ever seen a giraffe tongue, you'll notice that its coloration is dark, and that's to protect it from the sun, because they spend the majority of their time with their tongue out, because they're what we would call browsing. And browsing is literally just eating leaves off of a tree. But because they have to delicately get these leaves around these thorns, they have a prehensile tongue. So that means their tongue is able to wrap around leaves and take it from the limb, and then they can eat it. It doesn't stop there, though. You'll notice that giraffe have like really thick saliva. If you've ever had an opportunity to hand feed a giraffe or even just see a giraffe eating, you'll notice that they get this long string of saliva that'll go all the way to the ground.
Ugh.
Like we joke, sometimes you'll see it like blowing in the wind. It's really funny. But there's a point to it. The reason that it's so thick and almost not gelatinous, but really close, it's really thick, is because it coats the thorns and it makes it easier for them to swallow and digest. And so it essentially kind of protects themselves on the inside from this thorny piece of acacia that they just swallowed and then are going to ruminate. And if they're babies, help them grow big and strong.
Can you tell me too, because we're talking right now and I'm looking over your shoulder, and this area is just, It's so beautiful out here, Charlie, right? Every day is special at the safari park. What's like your typical day like coming out to this large savanna habitat? What's that like?
Well, so we come out, we drive around in pickup trucks, essentially, and that's how we feed.
That's different than other specialists, right?
Yeah, for sure. So we'll throw a bunch of like hay and bags of feed on the back of the truck.
Yeah.
And we'll drive around the habitat. Essentially, we make sure every animal is accounted for, big and small. So we make sure all of our Thompson's gazelles are there. We make sure all the giraffe are there. So
That's a lot.
That's a lot, yeah. And so we go around, and while we're feeding, we count everyone, make sure everyone's happy and healthy and getting around the habitat just fine. And then we try to dedicate part of our day for like training programs and operant conditioning, any sort of enrichment that we can do. Or a lot of times we have procedures and stuff that we have to deal with too.
I'd be willing to bet a lot of our listeners aren't too surprised to hear about everything you just listed there, Charlie. You know, with the care and the feeding, making sure everyone is healthy. But I do want to have you tell a little more about one thing you mentioned, and that's the operant conditioning you use, or the training of a giraffe to have it voluntarily participate in its own care. What exactly is that like?
Really, it's super cool, because you were saying earlier, Rick, about we don't really realize how big they are. Yeah. And then they put their head down and then you're like, oh my gosh, this head is like the size of my body. But that being said, like, I've worked with giraffe for well over a decade, and we recently started a training program to do hoof care on one of our bull giraffe. And he's one of the biggest boys we have here, probably the biggest. And by biggest, I mean, these guys grow up to 18 feet tall. Ooh, so I don't think Gowan is quite 18 feet, but he's getting there.
Yeah.
And so he's a big boy, but I never truly, like, truly appreciated their size until I was on my knees trimming his feet. Ugh. And I'm just like, I am like a beetle to him. Like, if he wanted to, he could just wreck me, but he doesn't, because we've built this relationship with him and he trusts us. He trusts that we're helping him. And it's like this partnership between wildlife care specialist and animal. And it's like the coolest thing to see, being on the ground and like looking up at this giant animal, even for someone like me who's a little jaded sometimes. I'm just like, holy cow, this is pretty cool.
I think that speaks to just the beauty of the work that we do. And we're so fortunate to be in the presence of these animals. But let's go back briefly to you being there, doing the trim, down on the ground, looking up, thinking, I'm just a beetle to this guy. Let's talk about size, so people really get a reference for the size of the hoof as well. So you're working on kind of trimming that hoof, kind of like, trimming the nails, filing it down, keeping it, nice and even and clean. People who have horses know what that's like, similar to that, and they understand the size. But you've worked with horses a lot.
Yeah.
And now you're working with giraffe. Talk about the difference. Talk about the size.
The giraffe foot's probably about the size of like a dinner plate, give or take. I guess it depends on what size your dinner plates are, but it's pretty good size. And a difference between an equid foot, which is one hoof. A giraffe is an artiodactylid, which that means it has two hooves or a cloven hoof. And so it's slightly different in its anatomy, and they're big and they have to survive a lot of different types of substrates and getting around sandy areas and rocky areas and going through grass. And so they're hard, just like an equid foot is, but they just have two toes instead of one.
I mean, you're talking about this hoof. I mean, in the wild, a giraffe can give a pretty gnarly kick to a lion if they're getting predated on, which really speaks to the skill set that you guys have with using operant conditioning techniques to work with these amazing animals, right?
Yeah, it's just building trust and building a relationship. And I got to be honest with you, like, especially in the case of where they really do need a hoof trim, 100%, if we trim that foot and he puts that foot down, he'll put it right back up and is like, thank you. Do some more. Like, it's so great. They feel it. They can tell that we've done a difference. And I think that just helps with the relationship building. But talking more about adaptations. So giraffe, when they're like defending their territory, they have these two like bony type protrusions from their head.
I've seen those things,
right? Ossicones.
Ossicones?
Yeah. Oh. And they're not like, sometimes people think they're like antlers, like what a deer has that will drop off. But they're not. They're actually part of their skull. And it's just bony protrusions that they use to like protect themselves. And this gets even better. Wow. We started this conversation talking about how I love their height, right?
Yeah.
Well, there's so much science behind how a giraffe can bend over to drink water because of blood pressure. And I'm not going to get into that because it's really sciencey. And let's be honest, I'm not sciencey.
We're not.
So there's been studies and thoughts that if you look at a giraffe, their skin thickness varies depending on places on their body.
Okay.
So the skin is actually thicker on their torso because when the males are fighting, that is the spot that they would hit with their ossicones. And so they've got this adaptation where their skin's thicker and it creates almost like an armored layer for them. And I'm going to go even farther with the skin thickness because then if you go down into their legs, it's been noted that their leg skin is really tight, not as thick, but it's tight. And they think that it's sort of like them wearing compression socks because they're so tall. And with gravity and the force of blood and all of that, they would just get edema down in their legs because their legs are so tall, but they don't. And they're like wearing natural compression socks.
That's wild.
Isn't that amazing?
That's crazy. You know, it makes me, we're talking about those adaptations, is how unique each species is. You know, I think like a peregrine falcon, you're talking about, they're diving down and a fighter pilot will black out if they try those type of turns that a falcon can do. And just thinking the height of the giraffe and all those unique adaptations for being so tall, that's crazy.
So, I mean, a giraffe's heart is like, I think they say it's like 2 feet. It's a huge heart. And think of the amount of blood that they have to pump to get down to the end of their extremities or to get
to their head.
And so their heart rate is like way faster than a human's heart rate because they have to get blood to all of these areas in the same amount of time that like we normally would. But I mean, that thing's working overtime. All of the anatomy and physiology of these guys is super cool.
Let's talk some more about the giraffe and some of the cool facts that make them unique. You know, we talked about the tongue, the eyes, a great eyesight. You talked about the ossicones that they'll use when the males have to neck or battle each other. What about their neck itself? It's surprising to many people that they have the same amount of vertebrae that you and I do. But as someone who works with them, would you think then that only having 7 would make it fairly unflexible? And do you think it's fairly flexible? Let's talk about that adaptation because it's impressive.
Oh, it's definitely impressive. Yeah, they have the same as us, but the difference is like theirs are like 10 centimeters long and so slightly larger.
Yeah.
But that doesn't make them any less flexible. We already talked about like how they defend themselves and so their neck really has to crane around. But what's interesting with a baby giraffe, when they're first born, if you watch them resting, you'll notice that they rest with their head kind of laying on their rump. So if you can imagine that, they crane their head all the way back around their necks long enough that their head rests on their little butt. Yeah, and it's because their neck muscles haven't quite developed enough so that they can fully support their head while they're resting. And so it just like lays down so they can get some shut-eye. I don't know that I've ever seen an adult really do it. Oh, I probably just haven't paid attention, honestly.
Let me know if you do.
Yeah. I do think that's part of the deal is that their neck muscles just aren't as strong as what they would be as an adult. And honestly, giraffe in general don't rest that often. They'll eat up to 75 pounds of food a day.
Oh, wow.
Wrap your head around that.
Yeah.
That's a lot of food.
Yeah.
And so for them, if they're taking leaf by leaf off of a tree, that takes them all day. So really, they're just browsing, which is eating leaves all day, and they spend a very small amount of time actually resting. I think in the wild, it's very rare to see them laying down. And if they are laying down, there's always somebody that's standing, keeping watch. A little bit different out here at the safari park. You'll see like all of our herd laying down at a time, except for one getting some shut-eye. But they don't actually close their eyes either. They'll sleep with their eyes open, kind of like a horse will do too.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
No. I want to go back to what you said about the 75 pounds of leaves. As someone who grew up raking leaves in the front yard, and I can remember filling up like a full trash bag of leaves and picking it up as a kid. So that was not even close to 75 pounds.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to wrap my head around 75 pounds of leaves. And I look out here at our savanna habitat and I'm thinking, if they ate 75 pounds every day, these trees would be gone. So talk to me about the process of what you have to do as a wildlife care specialist to feed our towers of giraffe, our herds of giraffe, about 75 pounds of food every day.
I love that you brought this up because I'm going to give a big plug to our horticulture department because...
I'm going to put in some applause sound too. Yes.
Thank you. Yes. Our browse team up here works tirelessly to provide browse for our animals, and especially for those that is their diet. So again, browse is just basically tree limbs. Yeah. And so our browse department basically scours our browse farm and some other areas across the county. They'll cut down limbs for us. And then we have what we call browse poles, which are just giant logs that are in the ground that have basically a pulley at the top of it. And so we hang these tree limbs from it and we pull it all the way to the top and we try to like create as close as what we could to the wild as we can for them. So not only do we hang it 20 feet in the air, we'll hang it 10 feet in the air, we'll hang it 5 feet in the air, because there's all these different browsing opportunities that if they were in the wild that they would have. And so we try to mimic that here. We're making sure that the yearlings and the calves and the two-year-olds all have the same opportunity that the big giraffe have. So we try to mimic that. It's kind of cool though, because you think that they're browsers, so they're just wanting the leaves. But from what I've noticed in my experience, the first thing that they go after is the bark.
The bark?
Yeah. So they'll go up to any kind of acacia branch. They'll go and they'll start stripping the bark off of the limb itself. And then once they got the bark stripped, then they'll start taking the leaves. And I'm sure there's probably some nutritional content that they like that more so than perhaps the leaves.
So what goes in must come out.
Yes.
75 pounds a day of leaves, high fiber. You had mentioned they ruminate. They have the multiple chambered stomach that brings the cud. They chew it up and all that. Mm-hmm. But something's got to come out the other end.
It sure does. And it does.
So as a wildlife care specialist, one of our specialties is looking at and making sure the quality of the poop that comes out the other end is appropriate, because that also is a tell on their health sometimes. As a wildlife care specialist of giraffe in a 60-acre habitat, how does one go around cleaning up giraffe droppings?
Well, if you're looking for a fecal sample, like if you need a specific one, then you have to go full stalker mode.
You mean you're like following this one individual?
Exactly.
All day.
And if they're onto you, like they'll give you the over-the-shoulder look like, stop it, leave me alone. Then you have to go like find a hillside with like a spotting scope or binos, and you're just like watching them. But they're giraffe. They're the watchtowers of the savannah. They're looking at you up on this hill and they're like, I still see you. I know that you're still doing this. So that can be a little problematic, but normally they can't hold it in forever and we end up getting it. But on a large scale, if we're just like cleaning, we use like tractors and dump trucks. And so we go through every day and we could never ever have it spick and span clean. Like you would just, it's a 24-hour job. But we go through with large equipment and eventually it gets composted.
And I love that you brought up the large equipment that you guys use. Myself, my background, more in the traditional zoo at the San Diego Zoo, it's a dustpan and a rake and a garbage can, you know, for my area to clean it up and a hose. And you guys are out here with dump trucks and front scoopers, you know, and tractors as your main tools to clean up, which is appropriate. I mean, like you mentioned, multiple species, including rhinos and giraffes and everybody else. So a lot bigger scale than what I was taking care of. But it really is a cool contrast. And I know that kind of leads us then into just your experience as a wildlife care specialist and what you get to do. What was it? One of the things we always love to talk about when we're talking to those who are really in the animal care or even the conservation side, what was the drew you to this as a career, as a, you know what, that's what I want to do?
Well, funny you should bring that up. Because I actually have a degree in graphic design and advertising, but...
It makes complete sense.
I know,
when you look
right?
at the patterns on giraffes, I get
yes,
it. I totally get it.
Yes, exactly. Most people don't. But fortunately for me, I grew up on a cattle ranch in South Dakota. And so I've been working hoof stock technically my whole life. And some of that translates. Not all of it. Like, it's definitely been a learning curve for me, especially early on. But having that basis and background of just general herd knowledge has made it easier to transition into working with exotic species, especially in this setting where we're dealing with herds. And I grew up knowing how to read the behavior and manage herds, and so it's certainly made it a little bit easier for me. And then I got my start here at the Safari Park down at Harder Medical Center, which is the vet hospital here that's on grounds, which we're also very fortunate to have that. Not a lot of zoos have their own medical facility. And so I started down there and I got to work with a couple legends down there that taught me everything that they knew and then some. And so I was very fortunate that I came at a time when I got to learn from some greats. Like, they'd worked here a really long time.
So let me ask you, though, why do you do what you do? You told us, you know, you grew up on the ranch. You started at the Harder Hospital here at the park. Why do you stick with it? What is the draw for you?
Well, I mean, like I said earlier, if the hardest part of my day is a giraffic jam, then that's not so bad, right? I'm in beautiful Southern California. I get to spend most of my time outside working with animals that are just amazing individually, but also seeing their interactions with each other. There was this giraffe that was born once, and for the longest time, we thought she was a water buck because she was born in the water buck herd. And so you would just see her. Those were her people. She would just go and hang out with the water buck. The giraffe might be like down on the beach area, and she would just be chilling with the water buck. I think because she was born next to them, she was like, oh, these are my people. Nothing to be afraid of here. And so it's like seeing those interactions, like, who can say that?
Yeah.
How many people do you know that could whip out a story about a giraffe thinking it was a water buck? And so, I don't know, just getting to work out here with these amazing species and know that I'm part of a facility that does a ton of conservation work. We take care of our animals here, but also in the wild. It's a nice feeling to take home. And then I work with some of the best people in the world. The best people that all share a passion for what they do. And we work in sometimes not great circumstances in terms of it's 110 degrees and we're right. scooping rhino piles and that
kind of
stuff.
Or it's raining cats and dogs, right?
Or it's raining mud,
yes. covered in mud.
You can't even get to your animals
nope.
because you have to dig out a gate. But that being said, like, we're all here to serve a purpose and we do it together. And so it's always cool to be a part of a really, really cool team. And we definitely have that here.
Very, very cool. Very cool. Well, as we wrap it up, what a great opportunity for us to sit here in this outlook as the park has just opened. It's not even open to the public yet, so our guests know. It's just this opportunity to sit out here. We have some people setting things up. Probably heard some birds in the background as well. As we're sitting here, three rhinos came up on the hill behind us, and the other part of the crash or herd is over there with some other animals. Jarley, thank you so much for spending time with us and filling us in about everything from the giraffe for the longest day of the year.
Thank you guys for having me.
Yeah, totally.
And
this is great.
I hope you guys celebrate World Giraffe Day on the 21st of June. It'll be a great celebration. And even if you're just thinking about a giraffe, that'll be helping celebrate. So thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
Couldn't have said it better myself, Charlie. Celebrating World Giraffe Day is about recognizing just how amazing these majestic animals are, but also about raising awareness when it comes to giraffe conservation.
Exactly. San Diego Zoo Wildlife Alliance and our partners definitely want everyone to fall in love with the giraffe and other wildlife as well, of course. And that's because part of caring for something also involves understanding everything about them. That's why our continued commitment to conservation in the Savannah Hub is so important for the giraffe, as well as the elephant and rhino species and everyone else out there.
Oh man, absolutely right, Rick. And it's totally worth noting as well that this is not something we can do alone.
Exactly. That's right, Marco. That's why we are the San Diego Zoo Wildlife Alliance.
Exactly right, buddy. You took the words right out of my mouth. It's all about partnerships, the communities, and our allies. Without everyone coming together to do their part, our conservation efforts wouldn't be possible.
So very true, Marco. And I really want people to know being an ally to wildlife doesn't mean you have to be a conservationist somewhere out in the wilds of the world. I mean,
right.
Sure, that's part of it. But San Diego Zoo Wildlife Alliance members are making a difference every time they sign up to be a member because their membership supports our mission and our work all over the world, including our conservation scientists out there doing that stuff.
Yeah, exactly right. We can't thank our members enough. Muchísimas gracias for all of your ongoing support. And if you're interested in becoming a member, it's super easy. Just head over to our website, sandiegozoo.org, and click on the membership tab.
Excellent advice, Marco. And you know what? I'm kind of liking the feel of the Savannah Hub.
Ah, you know what? Me too, buddy. What are you thinking? Stick around and maybe do one more episode about Savannah Hub?
That's an awesome idea. All right, everyone. Be sure to subscribe and tune into our next episode in which Marco and I explore the amazing wildlife from the Savannah Hub.
I'm Marco Wendt.
And I'm Rick Schwartz. Thanks for listening. For more information about the San Diego Zoo and San Diego Zoo Safari Park, go to sdzwa.org. Amazing Wildlife is a production of iHeartRadio's Ruby Studios. Our supervising producer is Nakia Swinton, and our sound designer and editor is Sierra Spreen. For more shows from iHeartRadio, check out the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.